She's back. Welcome back to season two of Conversations with Nova Reed. I can't tell you how excited I am to be back in my little podcasting chair and getting up close and personal with you. It's a joy to be back. It's been a long time coming, and it's hard to believe that a year has gone by so quickly. Of course, season one was birthed out of a global pandemic. I suddenly had no work and a lot of time, and I wanted to do something meaningful and give back in some way, and ended up birthing these incredible conversations. And I really wanted to be able to bring season two to you, but knowing that it was a passion project, didn't know how. So here we are. Thank you so much for my patrons, especially who've supported me in my downtime, because it was slightly ambitious. It was my intention to bring season two in autumn last year. I mean, I don't know what I was thinking. I've never written a book before. I had totally underestimated. And there are kind of two layers to this. The process of writing The Good Ally, which I've now finished, and should be with you in September 2021. But I underestimated the process of writing a book, not because I didn't think it would command a lot of me, because I have been a writer for many years, but writing articles for newspapers and magazines is very different to writing an entire book. But it commanded so much of me. So there's writing a book in the middle of a global pandemic, and there's writing a book in the middle of a racial injustice, well, continued racial injustice crisis. Let's not pretend that it hasn't always been an urgent crisis. It has been. And being in the belly of racism, I mean, one of my anti-racism students said, Nova, you're right in the eye of the storm at the moment. And she was not kidding. So it commanded a lot from me, and it meant I had to really focus inwards and just focus on doing one thing at a time, which is rare for me. I'm somebody who loves variety, but actually focusing on one thing at a time has enabled me to birth what I hope will be received as a really powerful book that supports people in transforming themselves and the world in some way. Sounds ambitious, but I don't think I've seen it when people lean into anti-racism work, when they understand what it is in its essence, when they have more knowledge, when they have more confidence, when they have more ability to self-interrogate and look at parts of their humanity that they have hidden or that make them feel shame, and stare it right in the face, how that brings courage and almost a silent power, and how we show up just transforms. I've seen it in anti-racism students, and I'm really grateful and humbled that I've been able to bring anti-racism work in book form too. So I have been busy writing a book. That explains the delay. So I thank you for your patience, and I really can't wait for you to read it. It's available, I mean, depending on when you're listening, it's available to pre-order now from your favourite online bookstore. And I look forward to being able to talk a little bit more about the journey and where I have gone. Sort of, it's such an interesting process, because you have an idea of where the book's going to go. Now, I first started writing various iterations of The Good Ally in 2018, and how the book has evolved, how I have evolved as a human being, how my writing has evolved, all contributes to the book that you'll have in your hands. I wouldn't recommend it for personal development, but you really, so there's so much of you that goes into writing a book that centers on trauma. So as a result, the book is definitely more autobiographical than I probably intended it to be in 2018. But what's been really interesting in going through this process, because it's also been a process of growth for me. In researching for the book, in the number of years I've been researching and truly understanding what anti-racism is and trying to understand where some of these social constructs and laws that dehumanize human beings based on who they cannot help but be really, really, really started. And in your research, you gain more knowledge, and in your knowledge, it takes you on a different direction. And it, in also exploring my own experiences of racism, like I can't write a book about anti-racism without talking about my own experiences of racism and trauma. It's just, the two are inextricably linked. I can't decompartmentalize in that way. So I've definitely had to be really vulnerable, because there's, I don't even think I can express how vulnerable it feels to put words on a page that, you know, will be there forever. And, you know, will have meaning and will be misconstrued and will also land with people and resonate deeply and also won't. There's a vulnerability that comes from sharing part of your humanity in that way that I probably hadn't really fully appreciated until suddenly you see all the words in black and white on a page. You're like, okay, whoa. Am I really comfortable with that story being out in the world forever? But what it made me do when, as part of the process, like the knowledge part is easy for me, deciding to share personal stories of trauma is less easy, because you can't write a book about racial trauma and anti-racism without reliving it to a certain extent. And people often ask, like, oh, you know, have you enjoyed the process? And my honest answer would be, for the most part, no. It's been very re-traumatizing. It's the most important work I've ever done, and I cannot wait for it to be out in the world. But yeah, it's been difficult. And I think that's compounded with the time that we're in a global pandemic, you know, the rise in interest and also lack of interest and resistant to racial justice and all that entails, and all of the complexities of being human and living life and things going on and losing people and illness and everything else that's woven in as you go along. But what I discovered when I started to think about, right, what stories do I want to share about things that have happened to me? It was really sobering seeing so many examples of racism just there on a page in black and white. I had so many to choose from. I had so many to choose from, and memories that I had buried were suddenly coming to surface. So it has definitely been a journey of growth and of healing. And I can't wait to share more with you about that. But it will, yeah, it will take you, the good Allah will take you on a journey. And it is honest and it is human. And it really does, for those who are ready to do the work, give them an opportunity to transform and be incredible change makers in the world. So that's a short update on what I've been doing since season one. I actually cannot believe that I'm recording this almost a year to the date of when the first podcast dropped on season one, episode one. And I didn't think we'd still be in a pandemic, if I'm honest. I thought that things would have got back to normal in autumn last year, and how wrong could I have been? It's been a really interesting time to observe human behavior and humankind and lack thereof it, of what we have prioritized as important and suddenly feel frivolous and don't have the same meaning now. I had the pleasure of meeting up with one of my sister friends for the first time. We haven't seen each other since 2019, early 2019, April 2019, for a number of reasons. Life, travel, illness, babying, all sorts of things. But we hadn't seen each other since April 2019 and had planned to see each other again, and it didn't happen. And then COVID happened. And so it was the first time for us to catch up and have a lovely brunch outside. And I cried. And it was just something so human about just being able to be with each other in person, in community. And I remember saying to her, oh my goodness, I had forgotten how your nose crinkles when you smile. And it was such a mindful moment. I cried. I am somebody who, we all as human beings need connection. There's so much research that shows it's good. It helps our psychological well-being. So, and you know, connecting digitally has been probably a lifesaver for some people during this time. But it's not the same as in-person human contact and connection. And I felt the power of that in that moment of just literally being together, sitting down opposite, chatting. And it's not like we haven't been chatting every day during lockdown anyway, but chatting, watching the world go by and just being present. And that is something that I personally have definitely taken for granted and work slightly nuanced, because my work is in activism and serving something greater than me, but we are not, that's not all that we are, and that's not all that we do. And I think, yeah, I would love for you to ponder and think about what it is that you've learned in the past year about what you have been prioritizing and what you will be prioritizing going forward. So it is great to be back. I mean, there's a lot gone on. There's a lot gone on, from a change in president, from Donald Trump in the US to President Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris, the first Indian and black woman to, well, first woman as well to be vice president, to white supremacists storming government buildings like Capitol Hill, to try and change that trajectory. I mean, there's so many things that have gone on. It feels like this is, again, another dimension. And I'm right over here to huge gaslighting, what Britain does best, from the revelations of Meghan Markle's interview with Harry, with Oprah, on the reasons why they left Britain, right through to a race report by the British government orchestrated by members conveniently elected to produce the report, who all conveniently also do not believe that institutionalized racism exists in Britain. So there's been a lot of trauma. And as I record this episode, it is the 5th of May, and I realize that we're coming up to the anniversary of, certainly not the anniversary of Armaud Arbery's death, but the anniversary of when Armaud Arbery's death and Breonna Taylor's death started to make mainstream news, and where this momentum towards the resurgence of Black Lives Matter really started to kick off in May last year. And then, of course, we've just had Derek Chauvin's trial, the police, ex-police officer, I should say, who put a knee on a man's neck for nearly 9 minutes, being found guilty. And how many of us hadn't realised how much we were collectively holding our breath Because even though we all saw in plain sight that this police officer was abusing his power in such a nonchalant way and inhuman way, the fact that we all saw him murder a black man on the street in broad daylight like it was nothing, lots of us knew that even though we had all this evidence and so many of us ended up being witness to this unwillingly, there was a high chance that this man could get off, because so many convictions towards police officers who abuse their power and kill or inflict violence on black bodies is so rare. And so there's this huge collective sigh when he was found guilty. And today I open up my social media timeline and I see his face on my feed appealing, saying he didn't have a fair trial and he was wanting to appeal. So, you know, white supremacy doesn't just dissipate or disappear when one police officer is held accountable. Like, being held accountable for behaviour in terms of systemic violence is not justice, it's the bare minimum. And because this happens so infrequently, what I witnessed was a lot of people misunderstanding the difference between justice and accountability. Justice would be police officers not killing people because they are black and not disproportionately fearing them because they are black. I think after the verdict of this trial, I think it was the same day, there was news of a 16-year-old girl who had called for help, who was a looked after child who was shot by the police. 16 years old, Makia Bryant, same day. So, you know, we have a lot of work to do. And that was just a sobering reminder of the difference between accountability and justice. Justice will mean that this disproportionate killing on black bodies will stop happening. And then we move over into the UK and we have Meghan and Harry. Well, Meghan in particular breaking her silence as to her experience in the royal family and her experience in Britain and courageously sharing, because I know it is not easy to speak about your experience of racism because you run the risk of receiving further abuse. So courageously sharing about her experience of being in the royal family and living in Britain and confirming what most of us in black and brown bodies already knew, that are huge components why Harry and Meghan chose to leave and go to America of all places, was because of the racism within the press and within Britain, and that they also experienced racism within the royal family with members who they didn't name and didn't feel comfortable naming, having real concern of what colour their baby Archie's skin would be. And what was really astonishing to me was, actually, I found that interview really hard to listen to, because what it did was highlight and reinforce in almost durable masking tape, it reinforced the experience that so many of us in black and brown bodies experience in the UK, of having racism and racial trauma, experiencing it day in, day out, living in this almost alternate universe, and so often not being believed. And so often having experiences gatlist and explained away. Well, maybe you're too sensitive. Or maybe it was X. Well, it was just a joke. You misread that. You misinterpreted that. Somehow we, you know, making the assumption that somehow we are unable and incapable of recognizing when our bodies are experiencing trauma. Like, our bodies know sometimes before our brain kicks into gear. So it was really painful to witness the interview, because Meghan was recounting so many of our experiences. And I think what it also highlighted is that for her, it was so untenable She chose to live in a different country, and she chose to go back to the United States. And I use that as a marker, because so often we get these rhetorics about Britain being the least racist country of them all, like we're in this weird competition, and not being as bad as the US and this, that and the other. And it's like, we really hide our racism well. But the impact on mental health is rampant and is problematic. And it was, yeah, it was a hard watch for all of those reasons. And then, of course, we saw, well, we knew what would happen. We would see the fallout and the response to Meghan sharing about her experience of racism in Britain, and also from within the Royal Institute, an institution that is put on a pedestal and is intrinsically linked with enslavement and colonization, how her interview was responded to, particularly from the likes of Piers Morgan, who basically said that she was lying, including her experiences of suicide and wanting to harm herself and end her life. Things got that bad, and Piers Morgan said that he couldn't believe a word that she was saying. And just seeing the response to that and the cultural gaslighting was just extraordinary to witness, and not in a good way. And then, of course, we ended up having a very dramatic exit with him storming off stage. But it really was a symbol of what so many people who are black and brown have regularly experienced in the UK, and how much work we need to do. Because it speaks to this race report, which I'm not going to go into great detail today, but it speaks to the gaslighting and how they tried to glamorize slavery within that, saying that that wasn't just all that went on. And I don't have it to hand, so I'm not going to paraphrase, but the attempts to glamorize slavery was just far-reaching. But it was that report, the Saw report, and what happened with Meghan Markle, they were linked for me because of the gaslighting. And one of the reasons why we will continue to not make progress or find it hard to make progress is if we spend more energy denying the existence of racism in Britain than actually taking intentional steps to address it. So it's really interesting for me. I'm doing a lot of work on racial trauma and healing with some colleagues who are in the United States, some of which I invite for a wonderful conversation in this season. And so because I'm now immersed in... It's really interesting. We often use the United States as a benchmark for how bad racism can be, especially when we see depictions of you know, Derek Chauvins of the world causing harm to black bodies, like George Floyd. And it's very interesting. You seeing the United States used as a benchmark for, well, this is the place that does the worst racism. I think their racism is just more overt and exposed and obvious than the racism that is here. But what it does, what there is in the States is a bigger community of people who are doing great work to make change, to make systemic change. And so in doing work with more experts around racial healing and collective healing, particularly from racial trauma, it's really interesting for me to hear observations and opinions of the gaslighting from Britain that goes on this almost global scale. And it is very interesting to observe. So I'm kind of catching us up on my thoughts on where we are, I guess, because of all that I have unearthed in writing The Good Ally, which includes so many of my own experiences of racial trauma, and of those an extraordinary amount of incredible human beings I had the pleasure and honour of entering and holding space for, and some of their accounts that are shared in the book. Naturally, this season felt like I wanted to segue into having conversations about healing. And so a lot of them will be about healing. They're still going to feature a lot of challenging conversations and lived experience, but yeah, I didn't pick a theme, and I certainly didn't pick a theme last year. I work very intuitively, so I like to go where the mood takes me. But yeah, there is definitely an emerging theme I can see. And to me, that is the essence of anti-racism. Like, so much of racism, well, not so much, all of what racism is was born out of lies and fear of the other. And such inhumane treatment needed to occur for so long in order to uphold these lies and fear of other. So many of us have swallowed it, believed it, and become a little bit less human along the way. And so for me, anti-racism really is about collective healing and reconnecting with who we are. And reconnecting with who we are outside of these lies and these constructs and this fear of other. And you cannot engage in anti-racism in any meaningful way without looking at the parts of yourself that make you feel shame and confronting them front on, moving through it, transforming. When more people do their inner work, there is less chaos in the world. So I think that's where I'm going to end. Just bringing you up to speed. Again, I don't plan where this conversation goes. I go with what I feel is on my heart to share. I really hope that you enjoy all that is to come in season two. And we will intentionally be journeying together at a slightly slower pace, with episodes coming out fortnightly. I know, all good things comes to those who wait. We're intentionally going at a slower pace. That is so I can manage all that I'm holding at the moment, and make sure that each guest and each episode gets the time and attention it deserves to be spotlight. So yeah, we have a corker of my very first conversation is an absolute corker. Part of me wants to share now who it is, but I'm not gonna I'm gonna leave you to wait to find out who it is. But I can't wait for you to hear some of the conversations in store. As always, go into them with open heart and curiosity. It really helps if you leave 5-star reviews on your favorite podcast host. So if an episode really speaks to you, please do leave a review. It is much appreciated. And if you're interested in connecting with me professionally, my anti-racism course. So I launched an anti-racism course back in, I originally recorded it in 2018, and it launched in beta mode in 2019. And it's now being updated and re-recorded from on 4K film with closed captions, like the previous version was me in my kitchen. So it's got some TLC and the content is upgraded, and I've really been able to bring more depth into it. And there are so many incredible change makers coming through that process of being anti-racist, and I witness them, how they're showing up in the world, in how they teach and how they parent, is just absolutely extraordinary. I had one teacher share with me the impact that this work is having on them. And she said, Nova, in the 12 years that I have been a teacher, in all of the training I've done teacher training CPD, this course and work has transformed me as a teacher. And obviously it was never my intention that the course transforms teachers in school, but you cannot do this work with full gusto, with full and open heart, without changing. And that has a ripple effect and a knock-on effect with every single person that you have contact and influence. Another reached out to me who are in an interracial relationship, and had said that they were teetering on the edge of breaking up, and that they shared my TED talk actually with their white partner, and who was struggling to understand racism beyond, you know, an overt act and somebody with a, you know, a white pointy hood on, and struggling to empathize with her experience of racial trauma, and shared my TED talk with him, and she said it's transformed their relationship. So I know I started out and I've spoken about how, you know, the difference between accountability and justice, and how actually we're barely scratching the surface with accountability. That's the reality of where we are with anti-racism right now. So many find it more offensive to have racism addressed than actually addressing the racism itself. And so we need to get more agile at holding others and being held accountable for behavior that is harmful before we're able to do any kind of lasting systemic change with justice. But it is possible, and you know, change makers like that on my course, in the world, doing the work and being changed by the work, always bring me hope. They always bring me hope and courage. So, yes, I kind of got off on a tangent as I do, but the course is called Becoming Anti-Racist with Nova Reed, and it is available now for those who are ready to dive into the anti-racism journey and want video support, lessons with me, video guided lessons with me, audio for those who are better at auditory processing, like me, PDF slides, history, there's a reading list, there's a film list, there's references. We look at media and we dissect that and really get a chance to embody and practice recognising racism beyond an overt act of hate, what to do about it, as well as how to safely self-interrogate and look after ourselves. So it is available now. Head on over to novareed.com. I'll leave links in the show notes to see more about what is in store and some of the changes that have been made. And yeah, for those who would love to dive in and do not currently have the financial means, I am now, this is kind of a call out for both. when I'm able to, we do have a bursary fund now, which means that I can offer some partial or fully funded places. Equally, I rely on donations for the bursary fund. So if you are interested, either being a donator or being a recipient, I'd love to hear from you. And the best way to do that is to email hello@novareed.com. So that's that. And there's, before I finish, I have been listening to a glorious collaboration between author and shame researcher Brené Brown and founder of the Me Too movement, Tarana Burke. And the book is called You Are Your Best Thing, and it really centres around shame, specifically for the Black experience. And the reason that came about was Tarana would say, look, Brené, your work is impeccable in terms of shame research and understanding shame resilience, but I cannot see myself in it. It's very white. And Brené was able to hear that feedback, receive it, and do something about it. So they have collaborated on this. I haven't finished it yet, but so far I'm it's like, it's just my love language. it feeds my soul. You Are Your Best Thing. It's particularly for people in Black bodies and people who want to hear about experiences that are different to their own. And we talk specifically about, they're talking specifically about shame and how it impacts black people and why they center on blackness. And also it reinforced why I center my work on not only a British lens, but a black British lens with intention. And I speak about this much more in my formal courses, but if you understand racism at its essence, you will understand that its birthplace is anti-blackness. And as a result of that, how we are treated and how our worlds are impacted are very different because of that. And so this book speaks to that. And there was something that both, well, it's Tarana that said it first, and then it was sort of summarized by Brené Brown about why it's so important that when we are sharing about our lived experience, that people are just seen and heard and believed, and not, oh yeah, I've experienced that too, and me too, or yes, but, and what about ism? Just heard and believed. And it goes something a little bit like this. So this is from Tarana Burke and Brené Brown's You Are Your Best Thing. We often carry our trauma in similar ways, but the roads that lead us to the trauma are oh so different. We must pay attention to that road. That road is our humanity. It is critical to understand the very different paths that lead us to the trauma. So without realising, because that book has just come out, and I've been recording these episodes, I started recording them at the end of February, just the theme of healing, unsurprisingly, the theme of healing from racial trauma really does play out in this season. And my invitation to you is to really think about that, to understand that yes, we all have experiences that are very human and at times are really similar and cross over. But what we do when we stop listening and try to compare our experiences to that of other people's is we lose part of our humanity, and we need to be able to listen, hear, hold space, and understand how trauma impacts us very differently so that we can actually start to heal. I cannot wait to bring you my very first conversation. Part of me wants to share with you right now who it will be, but it will be a surprise. And I'm really looking forward to journeying with you with season two. You will take me up to my book launch, my friends. So you will be with me until then. And it's an honour to share this space of the internet with you. Thank you for tuning in. You know what to do if this episode resonates with you. Please go on over and leave a review in your favourite podcast host. And as ever, you can connect with me over at Nova Reed Official. And I will leave links in show notes for my courses and other references I have made. And I will see you next time. Take care of you.